Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Homes.com knows that when it comes to home shopping, it's never just about the house or condo. It's about the home. And what makes a home is more than just the house or property. It's the location and neighborhood. If you have kids, it's also schools, nearby parks, and transportation options. That's why Homes.com goes above and beyond to bring home shoppers the in-depth information they need to find the right home. And when I say in-depth, I'm talking deep. Each listing features comprehensive information about the neighborhood, complete with a video guide. They also have details about local schools with test scores, state rankings, and student-to-teacher ratio. They even have an agent directory with the sales history of each agent. So when it comes to finding a home, not just a house, this is everything you need to know, all in one place. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
My mission is simple: to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. I'll be my friends. I'm just trying to make a little money. My job is not just entertain, but to educate and teach you. So call me at 1-800-743-CBC or tweet me at Jim Cramer. Faith is hard to come by on Wall Street. We have a tendency to be jaded. We think we're always being tricked or lied to or flat out bamboozled. So on a day where the Dow slipped just 2 points, that's be gained 0.74%, and the NASDAQ pole vaulted 1.68%, I want to explain what happens when we stop thinking that everyone's trying to bag us and start trusting the people who deserve it, the ones who've earned our trust. I think that's the key right now to making big money in the market, and many people are missing it. Why don't we start first with the Fed chief, Jay Powell? Now, here's a guy who doesn't get any credit for anything. He is the Rodney Dangerfield of central bankers. He's constantly being second-guessed, like he's clueless. That's just plain moronic. Powell's a pragmatic individual who doesn't surrender to politics or orthodoxy. He's the least promotional public figure in America today. He had to deal with once-in-a-lifetime pandemic, which caused our elected leaders to spend money like crazy. He accepted it. He never bemoaned it. When he realized that the pandemic was under control, though, he raised rates 11 times in order to stamp out inflation. Each time, the economy snapped right back, so he had to keep tightening. Powell kept doing it until he realized there could be negative consequences if he didn't stop. That's right. We're now in a situation where inflation has cooled dramatically, even if it's still too high. And we also have an absurdly strong job market. It's just too strong to justify cutting rates. So it's time for Powell to stand pat and see what happens. There's nothing wrong with that. We have such low unemployment that he can afford to play for time. What can I say? He's created a very positive situation where business is good and many of the key inflation inputs will come down naturally on their own. More on that later. And if unemployment spikes, well, guess what? He's ready to bail us out with rate cuts. What more could you ask for? Unfortunately, Powell hasn't earned the trust that I think he deserves. Part of that's because he allows a degree of free speech from his fellow Fed officials. That's ill-advised, sir. They, his own colleagues, end up publicly but obliquely second-guessing his every move, even if that's not what they intend. But that's how it seems, because the media always magnifies their comments and gins up faux controversy to generate more exciting headlines. Fortunately, Powell's got a thick skin, but the skepticism makes for rough sledding. It doesn't help that the latest seemingly overheated CPI reading was, I felt, misleading, something his critics will seize on because they want Powell replaced by someone more ideological. It's an unholy situation. But you know what? If you had faith in Jay Powell and just ignored all the noise, well, you could have made a great deal of money, couldn't you, during this period? Isn't that what would have happened? There are so many strategists who can't hold a candle to this man, yet they pontificate as if he's a suboptimal Fed chief. If you listen to them, you would have given up the whole market ages ago at much lower levels. Faith in Powell? He deserves it. Who else deserves our trust? Well, how about How about Jensen Huang from NVIDIA? For the last 5 days, we've had to hear about how major players like Amazon, Alphabet, and Meta are developing their own chips to decrease reliance on NVIDIA, while Intel comes up with a competitive product. The news, let's put some quotes around that. The news has crushed NVIDIA stock, creating a presumption that these key clients are moving to quickly distance themselves from the company and break Jensen Huang's stranglehold on the super GPUs. If only they could. Now, think back to when I last interviewed Jensen. I asked him directly about this competition multiple times because I knew it was coming. Each time, he made several things very clear. One, these companies will remain great clients. Two, right now, he simply can't give them everything they want because, purely because he can't produce enough chips to satisfy demand. And three, he's doing his best to help these clients develop these kinds of semiconductors. He can't understand what's the big deal. He comes in peace. Who's Jensen Huang? He's a visionary who's delivered on every promise and created $2.3 trillion colossus. Along the way, he's been doubted as if he were some sort of alchemist, a three-card mining dealer. Now, all I hear right now is that he's the man behind the AI bubble, as though this is the dot-com period all over again, 1999, maybe 2000. That kind of thinking has kept people from making fortunes in the stock of NVIDIA. What the heck did Jensen and his team need to do to earn your trust? How much value does he need to bring out, to create, before people realize that doubting NVIDIA has, in fact, been a very poor decision? He's not the con artist. You know who's the con artist? The bears are. Oh, and those claims that Intel's got the better chip? How dare they? Finally, there's Apple. Today we learned that Apple's going to refresh its whole Mac line of computers with its own AI chips. This story flies in the face of the prevailing narrative, which says Tim Cook and company have totally lost their way, stuck in a no-growth mode. Talk about a non-promotional guy. That's what Tim Cook is. I've come back and argued that you need to have faith, because this team will come up with something great. That's what they do for a living. That will allow the growth to come back. I told you that because Apple, that's what they do. Of course, the myriad Apple bears will come out tomorrow and just say, oh, it's just the Mac, which is not enough to move the needle. My ride post. If they can put these AI chips in the Mac, then they can do it to the iPhone. More important, if something else needs to be done to ignite growth, well, guess what? I think it's time to have faith that Tim Cook will come up with it. So far, my analysis of all three people has been correct over the long haul. Otherwise, Apple and NVIDIA, and in the case of J-PAL, the entire stock market would be much lower. Yep, I have faith that Jay Powell will fly the plane wherever it has to go. He's done it before. He'll do it again, with the only real turbulence coming from the condoning of absurd interest rate predictions from his colleagues. They should just say no comment when asked after giving how wrong they are. I have faith that Jensen Huang and company won't be crushed by their own clients. Instead, NVIDIA will help those clients deal with the shortage of Jensen's own supercomputer chips by coming up with less powerful chips that are still compatible with NVIDIA's product line. I have faith that Tim Cook will come up with a growth strategy for Apple, one based on technology that we love. We love. Because there are millions, literally millions of smart people who write apps for any kind of Apple hardware. Growth will return. If my positive track record on J-PAL or my own it, don't trade it philosophy on Apple and NVIDIA have lost you fortunes, you can knock me all you want. If my faith has been punished, well, you're free to change the channel, turn me off, watch Netflix. I don't care. But right now, I think I'm money good with these calls. And the critics, I say to them, show me the money. Bottom line, don't scoff when I tell you to have faith in these people who've made us all fortunes. It's the skeptics who've been wrong. They're skeptics year after year after darn year. Even if you don't want to have faith in Jensen Huang or Tim Cook, I think they at least deserve more trust than the bears, purely on the basis of the track records. Oh, and the bears, they should. You know what they do? They show you the honey. You know what I do? I show you the money. Last I looked, the banks only take the latter. Let's go to Joe in Illinois. Joe.
Jim, Bababuya, RSRG, Intuitive Surgical.
They're smart fellas. I had them on a couple times. All they do is raise numbers. That's what they do. I thought they were in the raise numbers business, but it turns out that what they are in is in the hospital business, and they are crushing it. They have the best machines there are. Sorry, I like GE Healthcare, too, though. That's my Chapel Trust. That. Let's go to Michael in Indiana. Michael.
Hey, Jim. A friendly hello from the friendly Hoosier State, home of Eli Lilly.
There you go. You know I like Lilly. I think it goes much higher. I'm looking at Eli Lilly being the next trillion-dollar stock. What's happening?
Hey, I wanted to let you know that I just joined your investing club 2 weeks ago.
Oh, fantastic.
And, you know, for what you're offering for less than a dollar a day, it's a steal.
Oh, thank you, man. Thank you. Thank you, Michael. That's terrific. Thank you, Michael. What's going on?
Hey, I want to talk to you about this well-known stock that was just recently around 195, but it's recently taken a beating. Its forward PE, dividend yield, and net margin are all vastly superior to one of your favorites, Chipotle. What are your thoughts on McDonald's?
Okay, McDonald's raised the price too much. And that's one of the things I saw in the CPI number yesterday that I didn't like. I think that McDonald's has contributed to that. They have to pull back prices. Nobody in this business ever wants to lower prices. This is time for what we call a Philip Morris moment for McDonald's. They happened to do something they did in the 80s where they lowered prices, wiped out all the competition. McDonald's should come out tomorrow with a $2 Happy Meal. It has everything in it. They crush the competition, and we'd all go to McDonald's. So they ought to take that position. I'm right. They have to do it. Bill, Massachusetts, Bill.
Booyah, Jimbo.
Yo, man, what's going on?
How are you today?
Today's just a dynamite day. Probably one of the better ones I've had in the last three.
You know what, Jim? You've affected my trading so much. Now I enjoy when the market goes down because I know I'm going to get a bargain on these incredible
companies. Well, you're a sadist. You're saying, but I share that sadism. I've shared that view. Let's make money together.
I used to panic every time that I'd sell everything. Sell. Now I stay with everything.
You taught me that.
Thank you.
Okay.
My question is on Meta. I call them the three horsemen. Meta, Google, and Amazon. They have more data on Americans than any companies in the world. And I think that in this AI training, I think these three companies could be big. I love all three of them, but I'd love to see what you think about Meta and where it's going at this point.
Look, I'm a Zuckerberg believer. When it wasn't cool, I was a Zuckerberg believer. But I have to tell you, I think Meta can go much higher because the multiple's not that high, and I think Instagram's still in early. And if the government ever moved against TikTok, you'd be paying $700 for Meta. But the government is as effective against TikTok as it is in every other aspect that I see. All right, look, you have to have some faith in the people who made us fortunes. They at least deserve more trust than the bears, right, based purely off their track records? Well, man, buddy, tonight, there's a lot of players in the artificial intelligence space besides NVIDIA, you know. How about Marvell Tech, which hosted a special AI event right here in New York City today? I'm getting the latest from CEO. Then the alcohol industry may be under pressure from a host of secular challenges, but you wouldn't know that by looking at that quarter from Constellation Brands, would you? I'm digging into that club name with the CEO. And you might know it as a pandemic darling, but DocuSign has a lot more going for it than that. I'm hearing more about the company's new era and outlook with the CEOs, and you don't want to miss it. So stay with Cramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on X. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Mentions. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
Fact. Running a business is not getting easier on your wallet. With higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. Also a fact, smart businesses are reducing costs and headaches by graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You can cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. See how you'll profit with NetSuite, and then you can think of all the ways you could be spending the money you save. Company retreat in Malibu, anyone? By popular demand, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to NetSuite.com to start saving.
When you're hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. Plus, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Mad Money. Just go to Indeed.com/Mad Money right now and support this show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Mad Money. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Everybody knows NVIDIA's ultra-fast GPU chips are the basis for nearly everything related to AI. But there's a lot more to AI infrastructure than just one company. Take Marvell Technologies. Look, this is formerly a pure-play semiconductor company that now also makes advanced networking equipment, exactly what you need to help data move faster. Get you better throughout all kinds of hardware. For AI, you need vast quantities of GPUs wired together to increase their overall computing power. And it's Marvell's ultra-fast optical interconnects that make that happen. Now, full disclosure, when these guys reported a little over a month ago, the results were really okay. But listen, even though Marvell's data center business is on fire, other divisions that aren't AI-related did, I think, is much bigger. So that's what we should be focused on. Longer term, the non-data center businesses should come back. But for the time being, we need to ask ourselves if the AI opportunity is big enough to offset the weakness everywhere else. Look, today Marvell hosted the AI Era event here in New York, where they spelled out the scale of that opportunity in great detail. So it's enough. Let's go straight to the source with Matt Murphy, straight shooting chairman, CEO of Marvell Technology. Find out more. Mr. Murphy, welcome back to Mad Money. It's been way too long.
It's been way too long to be out here, Jim. Thanks for having me today.
Absolutely. So, Matt, everyone wants to say, look, there's NVIDIA, and you know we love NVIDIA, but there's more players than just NVIDIA involved. And when I look at the total addressable market and I look at what you're doing, I'm thinking you're about as close to NVIDIA as we can get.
Yeah, we just had our AI event today, as you mentioned, and we said that we would be the most exposed and levered company to AI, except NVIDIA. Our friends at NVIDIA.
Now, how is it possible that optical interface could be as big? And what is the total addressable market of AI and then you?
Sure. Yeah, the interconnect, as we call her, connectivity, is crucial to the deployment of AI systems. Because if you think about it, all of these computers, GPUs, accelerators, whatever you want to call them, the connective tissue around those computers, those brains, is the connectivity. And it's all driven today by high volume, high reliability optical connections. And so the way to think about it is you've got GPUs that need to communicate with each other, clusters that need to talk to each other, communications inside the data center. That's where we come in. So we partner with all of those companies on that.
Including, we saw the introduction to Blackwell, their next generation comes out in September. I presume you're there too.
Yeah, we are involved in our connectivity business, Jim, with every major GPU and accelerator deployment that's occurring today.
Okay, so I know that you also have a weaker end market. That's a very cyclical business. You've been very forward that is going to look not great. Right. At what point will we not think about it? Because you have so much AI.
Yeah, great. Let me get that one out of the way. So we have some traditional businesses in enterprise and carrier telco that, to your point, we were signaling a while back, hey, these are going to go through a cyclical
weakness. You've been totally upfront about
that. We were. Right. And so we announced those results. We said Q1, which is the quarter we're in, is the bottom. And so we're going to see a recovery off the bottom on those. But just to contextualize it, okay, those two businesses together, kind of at their normal run rate, were a couple of $1 billion. You asked me earlier about the AI opportunity, and we had our Investor Day event today. We outlined a $75 billion total available market for Marvell in data center. Right. Okay, so that opportunity, quite frankly, dwarfs any other opportunity that we have.
Okay,
today.
Well, that presumes meant that you must have more than, say, one or two hyperscaler customers that you work with.
We do. We work with all of them.
All hyperscalers?
All hyperscalers. Okay. And it's not just, so on the connectivity, as I mentioned, we're involved across the board. We're in every deployment. One of our executives today said, in his opening line, We at Marvell, our connectivity chips have helped train every large language model that's ever been trained.
Okay, so like today when Andy Jassy was talking about large language models, AWS, then you're part of that.
Yes, all of our connectivity is part of that. And that came, the basis of that, by the way, came from Inphi, which was a company we acquired, as you remember, in 2020. And you rightly at the time said, this looks like an incredible purchase and it would fit you synergistically. It's been a home run acquisition.
Well, thank you. I mean, in fairness, I mean, I'm tutored by good people. Right, we know some of the good people together.
Sure,
and
yeah.
What I learned was it wasn't necessarily that you thought this would be as big as it was when you bought it.
Well, we didn't know it would be of this magnitude,
right,
because we knew the AI design wins were there.
Right.
We didn't know how big it would be. But the other part of our business, Jim, that's important to talk about when you talk about who we work with and what we do, is we also participate in the custom silicon portion of the market.
Okay.
Where, and what that means is, behind the scenes, we work with our customers, large hyperscale customers, to help them develop their own key silicon chips in AI, as an example.
Oh, the ones that Jassy talked about, the ones that Google talked about the other day.
So when you see those types of announcements, Marvell's typically involved somewhere in that process.
But we gotta step back for a second. You know that I have been, and you've helped me, of course, it encouraged me to believe how big this could be.
Yeah.
Now, Wall Street's very skeptical, and they're just saying, you know, like, Jim, you're like pie in the sky. Like, what is with you in this AI? I look at it from talking to someone like you. The orders define me. I'm not making stuff up.
Right.
And they wouldn't be ordering. These are sophisticated customers. They wouldn't be ordering unless they had customers that wanted their product.
Yeah, we said today in my presentation, actually, that absolutely this CapEx build that's happening,
right,
which was $260 billion of data center CapEx last year, makes total sense because there's a multi-trillion dollar opportunity to go after in productivity, efficiency, improving businesses and so forth with the use of AI. So when you put it in that perspective, it makes sense. And by the way, for the data center, like, total market, which is why you see all these companies doing well and why it's not just a one, you know, short-term thing, this is projected to be like a $200 billion total opportunity for the semiconductor industry, data center. Now, we're going to address $75 billion of it, but it's enormous. And there's real reasons for that.
Well, then let's go full circle. I think that the reason why the stock was not up as I thought it might be huge is because you still cannot say, you know what, the weaker stuff is now turned. And if you had been able to say that, even if it's not that significant, Matt, and you and I both know that, then I think the stock would have been up 5 or 6. But people still want to wait for the so-called other shoe, and that's why it's not back to where it was. I don't know what else to say. I thought it was... You're up point. You're up 78% one year. So, like, I guess we shouldn't be playing.
It's been doing okay. But I think what I would say is my experience in doing these, whether it's earnings calls, acquisitions, investor days, usually, quite frankly, the long-only investors, the people who really think about how to play the stock long-term, sometimes there's a lag effect, And so we never look at these types of events. I mean, we gave a five-year outlook today. We did not give a short-term update. And I would say resoundingly, the feedback today after the event at the lunch from our most strategic long-term investors was home run, opportunities way bigger than we thought. You guys are executing really well. You're winning new customers. You helped us understand the opportunity in detail. And so I feel really good about the event. I'm not looking at today. I think the only thing I heard was that people were hoping I would give a bigger number for next year in AI.
Please.
What
you gave was realistic numbers, and
what we said is we're going to grow another $1 billion incremental next year, and that was a base floor case for where we would be with some upside given the market. So
let's leave it at that.
We feel really good.
Let's leave it at that. I think this was a home run. I agree with you. That's Matt Murphy, President, Chairman, CEO of Marvell Technology. I think the stock revisits where it was, in the high 80s, low 90s. And money's back in.
Coming up, earnings are in. Are they worth toasting? Constellation Brands joins Cramer next.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
This morning, we got results from my favorite beverage play, Constellation Brands, best known for its Mexican beer portfolio. Think Modelo, Corona, Pacifico, although it's got a wine and spirits business, too. I like this one so much that we own it big for my Chapel Trust, and today I'm feeling buzzed because they reported some fantastic numbers. Constellation delivered a 15-cent earnings beat off a $2.11 basis, higher than expected sales, led by their stellar Mexican beer portfolio. Wow. Stock's been a winner all year. It's rallied another $3 and change today. Can it keep climbing? Let's check in with Bill Newlands. He's the president and CEO of Constellation Brands. Get a better sense of the quarter. Mr. Newlands, welcome back to Mad Money.
Thanks, Jim. Good to be here.
All right, so Bill, this is what I felt, especially because of the weather, your best quarter ever. And I want people to understand how much a percentage of the growth of beer you are, the new products that you've introduced, and what you're doing with this bountiful free cash flow.
Well, it's a spectacular year for us. As you point out, a lot of things happened this year. Modelo became the number one beer by dollars in the U.S., but it was not limited to Modelo. We were the number one CPG growth company in 23, which made five of the last 7 years when that's been the case, when we've been number one, and 11 consecutive years when we've been in the top 10. It was really a spectacular year for our beer business.
Now, I don't want to be too forward, but we do have what's known as a spring shelf reset. You have a huge number of new products. I don't know whether you're going to be able to put in some of these fantastic new drinks, which sound, frankly, I don't know. I mean, I got to try the Fresca Picante. I haven't had that. I haven't had the Negro Con Chili. But with this new space, what do? Do you put in these new brands, or you just flood the zone with Modelo and Pacifico and Corona?
It's some of both of those. You know, we were pleased that we've gotten more than double-digit increase in our shelf space here in the spring resets. And frankly, we deserved it because of the velocity of our brands. But in some instances, it's broadening out our core franchises. And in some, as you point out, it's opening up great space for our innovation. Our innovation agenda has been going equally well. You know, Oro this past year was terrific. We're adding two new SKUs in that. Our Aguas Frescas, which we tested in Las Vegas this year, is being expanded across the country. So we've got a lot of good things coming, and will you put that space to good work?
Meanwhile, Pacifico, 17% growth. I wish people understood how hard this is. Could you please tell people how hard it is to get 20 million cases in growth?
Well, as you said, it isn't easy. But Pacifico has been one of those great brands. It's very developed on the West Coast, but it's also really starting to express itself around the country. We've got 47 out of the 50 states that are up 50%. Excuse me, up 50 are up over double digits. So we've had a great run with Pacifico, and it's really just getting started in many ways because it's very overdeveloped in the state of California. But the East Coast is really coming on. Some of the beach markets in Florida and New Jersey are coming on. We're very excited about the long-term potential for Pacifico.
Yeah, I'm probably just seeing it. You know, we've loved it for a long time. Now, there are a lot of companies that people in the consumer packaged goods space that don't have your growth, and what they get excited about is buying back shares and dividend. I always say, look, if you had anything to grow, put the money in that. You guys are still growing brewery because you have too much demand with your current brewery, right?
We do. But the benefit is of a company like ours with great cash flow is we can do all of those things. We put more than $900 million last year into returns to our shareholders and dividends and share buybacks while still putting $1 billion into our development of our beer business. You know, we're building out Veracruz. That will come out about a little over a year from now. That will open. And we've added capacity at both Nava and Obregon. So we're continuing to invest in the future because we see a long runway for our brands.
Okay, I know the analysts are going to be disdainful if I don't say it. You do have you've got the wine and spirit portfolio. It was not up to snuff with you last time I spoke. Now you've got someone new, fresh eyes, worth putting a lot of money toward, or just let it go as is?
Well, we spent a lot of time looking at it and saying, you know, what do we need to do? We're going to put a lot more focus on the critical brands, brands like The Prisoner and Meiomi and High West and Mi Campo as examples. We're also going to make sure that we focus our attention on execution. I think we spread ourselves a little too thin the past year. Sam Glaser, who we just introduced as the new president of the business, got over 30 years in the business. And we're really looking forward to what he can bring and the kind of executional excellence that we think will be important for that business going forward.
Okay, need that. Now, on-premise versus store, what do you want to do here? What ratios do you want?
It's interesting. We still haven't gotten back to the ratio we saw before the pandemic. We used to be in the 15 to 17% range of on-premise being of our total, but that number is still around 13. So there's still plenty of room to grow. That's an area that I don't think has ever quite returned to where it was beforehand. And it kind of goes in spits and spurts. We see a lot of opportunity there. We gained share with Modelo, with Pacifico, and with Corona last year in the on-premise. But we think there's a lot of room to grow there as well.
What do you think is behind the slowing in Corona? I mean, I got my theory that everyone likes Modelo so much, yet you had to take your tap out that was Corona and put it with Modelo because of the demand. And there's not enough new taps. But am I reading that right, or is just Corona a little low and we've got plenty ahead?
Corona's still solid growth. We grew about 1% last year. And admittedly, there's some interaction between Modelo and Corona. But we've got a real ace up our sleeve coming this year. We're going to do a test called Corona Sunbrew in the Northeast. You'll get a chance to have some of that. I think it's terrific. And it really opens up a very new and interesting dimension to Corona. So Corona is going to continue to be a really important part of our growth profile going forward.
Then the last thing I need to know is, when you're paying down debt, what's the correct amount of debt? And the reason I say that is because it's going to inflect. And one day you're going to come on, you say, listen, you know, the debt's at the level, but it's not going to be zero. I don't want it at zero. What level do we not worry about? What level do we say, hey, listen, it's time?
We think about 3x is the right place.
Good.
We were at that about a year plus ago. We had the D class, which got us up a little higher than that. But we're very close to that, and we expect to get to that. That ratio before this fiscal year is over. So we think that's about right for us.
That's going to be blast off, Bill, when that happens. Well, look, I thought this was the best quarter that I've had with you, working with you, and I think people should understand that. Bill Newlands is the president and CEO of Constellation Brands. Bill, this is a great day to see you. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks, Jim. Appreciate it.
Mad Money's back after the break.
Coming up, they're about more than signing on the dotted line. Can this company reinvent itself with the power of AI? Find out next.
What's the path forward for an independent DocuSign? The e-signature company that revolutionized the process of closing business deals during the pandemic saw its stock get clobbered as the world went back to normal. It's still down over 80% from its 2021 highs. But DocuSign shares managed to stabilize last year, thanks in part to reports last December that said the company was working with advisors to put itself up for sale. Since then, though, we've heard that those talks are stalled, meaning a sale is likely off the table, something it's easier to swallow given that the company reported a pretty good quarter a month ago. So now we got to figure out what's next. And today we got a glimpse of what of that as DocuSign unveiled its new intelligent agreement management platform. What could it mean for the future of their business? Let's take a close look with Alan Tegeson. He's the CEO of DocuSign. Learn more. Alan, welcome back to Mad Money.
Thank you, Jim. Great to be here.
Okay, so do we have a new DocuSign? Because a lot of people want to say that this is the way to be able to make the company go beyond a signature company.
Yes, I think it's really a reinvention moment for us. As you said, we're launching this new category, intelligent agreement management, to help companies of all sizes manage their agreements from creating to committing and managing them.
Now, what's different from the way I would do it now? I like DocuSign. It seems very simple to me. I've never sent anything. I've never sent any of my renters or anything that was not personal enough. What do I need to make it better?
Well, so nothing's changing about the signing moment.
Okay.
I think that was a very high value point in time, and I think we did a good job solving that. But if you think about every step of the agreement journey, from creating the agreements, negotiating and drafting, editing them, getting them routed for signature, signing them, and then managing them once they're executed, today's agreements, they go into a deep, dark place. Most companies can barely tell you where they are, let alone what's in them. And so we are bringing a suite out to help along every step of that journey and bring intelligence to every step.
Oh, so this is that trapped agreement.
That's right.
And it's a very costly thing, right, that we have
it
trapped
is.
Agreements?
Yeah, so the agreement trap refers to the value loss the companies experience from mismanaged agreements and processes.
Right.
And so if you think about it, whether it's you're in sales and your sales reps are wasting valuable time getting an agreement that's already been agreed to in principle, maybe your vendors aren't delivering what they promised in your agreements, or you're missing out on a key hire, those are all symptoms of mismanaged agreements. And we worked with Deloitte to quantify this. They pre-released some work this week, quantifying the loss at $2 trillion annually for companies of all sizes globally.
Okay, so what? I'm sure you have beta testers. What are they saying about it?
Yeah, so we have hundreds of companies that are beta testing our new products. And I mean, the response is fantastic. We built this solution based on customer input. We heard from them what their pain was, and we tried to tailor a solution to that. So we're hearing great experiences in making it easier to enter into agreements for consumers or business-to-business agreements, and then extracting the value out of these agreements that today are dumb flat files.
Okay, so now you have more than $1 billion in cash, no debt. You've had to slim down. We know that.
Yep.
Off the table now, these where you say, listen, maybe we're for sale and someone comes to you, just forget about that?
Well, I'm not going to comment on rumors, but what I will say is we are excited about our journey as an independent public company. I think today's announcements show the potential of what DocuSign can be, and that's what we're pursuing.
Okay, if I'm listening, I'm Marc Benioff, I think the CEO of Salesforce, I might say they're encroaching in our territory because they're doing the kind of intellectual, let's say artificial intelligence that we owe to ourselves. Are you going to be in against them?
No. We have a fantastic partnership with Salesforce. I think it's probably our longest standing partnership. We have tens of thousands of customers that have deployed Salesforce and DocuSign together. And I think Salesforce is very excited about what we're doing because agreement management is not really their business. And companies want solutions that span not just sales, but purchasing, HR, and other functions. And so that's less well suited for them.
So when I saw this, I said to myself, they have $1 billion in cash. Why don't they just go buy somebody really great? You think it's better than anything that's out there? Or is it just this is the direction you want to go and you have the people internally to do it?
You know, yes, we had the people internally to do it. We had all the customer feedback. We had a lot of the pieces. We just hadn't put it together in an integrated, re-architected suite, which is what we're announcing today. But I'd also say, we are in a unique position to do this. No one has solved this problem before. No one has provided an integrated suite. And if not DocuSign, then who? We are the largest player focused on agreements. We have this special trust position because of our signature product. And we have 1.5 million customers that have already bought from DocuSign.
But now I would say I would have thought that you would have been adding more customers of late. I mean,
I think we're doing okay. We added 40,000 customers last quarter.
I was looking for guys more than 300,000.
Yeah, well, yeah, we are adding. We've been adding the last couple of quarters, and we're working on it. So I think we're doing okay. We're holding our own.
Not set back by that interlude with the Bain and all that stuff?
No. I don't think customers care about those kinds of rumors. So.
Okay, and then I got to use it. How's business? We talked about the new product. How's business?
You know, I think we had a very strong Q4, as you mentioned.
Yes, you sure did.
Really solid quarter, top and bottom line, record cash production, doubled our operating cash, and I think we're poised for growth. So this is really about our long-term
transaction growth is good. Mortgage is good. All the different kinds.
So I think I'm optimistic. We're not changing our guidance, but we think this is a very positive sign for the company, and I'm really excited about rolling it out to customers.
Because candidly, you know, I was thrown. I was on when you reported, and I said, "Geez, that looks like a great number." And I was confused that the market didn't see it that way, but maybe they needed to see some more new product and. That's what you're giving them.
I think the market is in wait and see mode, but I think we've held up pretty well over the last 6 months.
I agree.
I'm pretty happy with where we're at.
I was taken aback, but now I feel much better because I see that I'm going to be right.
I think you will be.
That's how it is. The CEO of DocuSign. Guys, this is a very inexpensive stock, and they did do something that I think was pretty breakthrough to them, and you just heard about it. Mad Money's back in for the break.
Coming up, hit us with your best shot. An electrified fast fire lightning round is next.
Hello to my friends from the High School of Economics and Finance here in Lower Manhattan. Tonight is the night, 10 p.m. Eastern, here on CNBC. You must be tuned in to my great friend Carl Quintanilla for his program, Cities of Success. Tune in. It's going to be fantastic. And now it is time. It's over the lightning round. Command points work for Mark Fulnum. You see in the Star Center. Bye. So pick up the play this out. And then the lightning round is over. Are you ready? Ski Daddy. Time for the lightning round. Crimson Blitz over Walter in Virginia. Walter.
Hey, Jimmy.
What's up?
Talk to me about the last 3 years. New Fortress Energy has gone from 30 to 60, 30 to 60, 30 to 40, and it's back at 30. What in the heck is going on? And you're saying buy it.
I think Wes Edens got, the government changed the rules. They said 2028, we got to put a pause on LNG. I thought that was outrageous. I think that the government should relent. It's great for internet, for energy security, great for our allies. I like New Fortress, but right now, Wes Edens is kind of just hurt by the president. Let's go to Mike in Illinois. Mike.
Hey, good evening, sir.
Good evening, Mike. Real good. How about you? What's happening?
It's a bodacious day in paradise. Calling about Cummins. I bought them as an infrastructure play. Buy, sell, hold.
Buy, sell, hold Cummins? I like Cummins very much. I think it's terrific. Let me throw in two. I'll give you Packard. I'll give you twofer. Let's go to Phil in Michigan. Phil.
Booyah, Jim.
Hey, Phil, what's up?
I'm a member of the CNBC Investing Club, and I really appreciate all you do for us retail investors.
Thank you. Thank you, buddy. Thank you.
In my 12-stock portfolio, I already have two healthcare-related stocks right now, Eli Lilly and GE Healthcare. Should I also buy Abbott Labs?
Yes, I really want you in Abbott Labs. Why? For it's this quality diagnostic and a medical device company. If the Fed does overreach, as some people think, then I think it's going to be the right call. And it's got great growth. You've got a lot of 420%, four growers that are the fastest growing I've seen the company in a very long time. Let's go to Tony in Florida, please. Tony.
Hey, Jim, I want to thank you and your wife because I met you up in Palm Gardens there. And
Lisa's the best, huh? She's much nicer than I am. Well, wow, that's not it. There's 330 million of those people. No, she's terrific. She's terrific. Thank you.
But, I bought it, and I have it neat. But I found out if I have it with a little bit of cheese, it just brings out more of the flavor, more of the smoke flavor.
Fosforo. You said this is the best advertisement my wife has ever had for Fosforo. Fantastic. Lisa, listen up. She's going to find out I have a show, and she's going to figure out where I've been all these times. What's up?
Not much. I got a stock that I have a small position, but I'd like to make it bigger. It seems like it's supposed to be a regional bank, but to me, it's a bigger bank and has a lot of, I think, going for it. I have my house with them, and it's PNC. Do you think?
You got horse sense. I don't understand why PNC is down here. I think it's going to have, it's got a 4% yield. You buy half here, and then if it doesn't report the number they want next week, then I think you can buy more. That's how good I think about that stock. Let's go to Anthony in Rhode Island. Anthony.
Booyah, Jim. Booyah, here.
Thank you.
Question for NEO. Would you buy, sell, or hold out?
Answer for NEO. I would sell, and I would buy Ford. If you can get it at $12.75, I would say do it now. Let's go to Neil in Louisiana. Neil.
Hey, Jim. Thank you for taking the call. Appreciate your insights.
Thank you.
And my question is on Palantir Technologies.
Look, I think they have unbelievable technology, and I think that they work closely with the government. As far as I'm concerned, $22 goes to $28. Make a move and buy some. And that, ladies and gentlemen, the conclusion of the Lightning Round.
The Lightning Round is sponsored by Charles Schwab. Coming up, housing and cars tell the story of a Fed stuck in second gear. Can Jay Powell shift the economy in a direction to delight investors? Stick with Cramer.
As much as I think he's the greatest, I don't envy Jay Powell right now. The Fed's stuck between a rock and a hard place, but Wall Street seems unwilling to admit it. We know the Fed wants prices down. That's a bedrock reason why it tightened so aggressively from 2022 through late last year. Historically, a bunch of rate hikes are a great way to push prices lower, but this time it's been a lot less impactful than you think. Let's take two markets that are very important to consumer prices, shelter and cars. In the CPI report we got the other day, they only measure rent and housing accoutrements, not actual home prices. These tend to be highly correlated. Housing represents one-third of the value of the CPI on market basket, so every increase in the cost of shelter hits particularly hard. Autos are also a major component, and those price increases were relentless, especially in used cars. Thanks to pandemic-era supply chain disruptions, the automakers took forever to ramp up production, which kept pricing excessively strong. Now, the biggest problem with housing and auto inflation, though, it's the Fed itself. This morning, CarMax, the big used car dealer, reported a dismal quarter and told us that used cars are finally getting cheaper. But there's still major sticker shock because of financing costs, which are controlled in large part by the Fed. We're seeing their average interest charge per month at $530. That's well above the long-term average of $400. In short, if the Fed were to cut rates, not raise them, but cut them, automobile inflation would actually go down. Same story to housing. We've got persistent housing shortage pushing prices up, and the high cost of mortgages only make it worse. Worse in years. Many people who'd normally be eager to sell their home simply won't do it because they don't want to give up their ultra-low mortgage rates from the many years when rates were much lower because we had to combat COVID. Who wants to swap a 3% mortgage for a 7% mortgage? I know I don't. It's no wonder that housing affordability is indeed the worst since the 80s, at least according to the Journal. Now, if you're on the Fed and you see the CPI remaining stubbornly high, you only have one tool. You can raise rates to try to get prices lower. But right now, raising rates will make housing and autos more expensive, which means the Fed's one tool doesn't work. In fact, if we want more cars and houses, which is what would solve the problem, then I'd argue the Fed actually does need to cut rates. When you look at the other big contributors to that overheated CPI number, a big part of it was food, which comes down. You know, what's happening? It's because of the bird flu epidemic. It's jacking up the price of eggs and poultry. And that epidemic has just now spread to cattle. There's nothing the Fed can do about that kind of food inflation. Same goes for the huge increases in the cost of insurance and sales tax. No influence there. Rate cuts won't make a difference for either of those. But the Fed really can't cut interest rates when unemployment's at 3.8% and inflation's still a good bit away from their 2% target. In other words, the Fed really is in a box. If it raises rates, the home builders will put up even fewer houses. They've learned their lesson. Build a suit, not build recklessly. Rate hikes will simply lead to fewer homes being built. That's why I think the Fed has to play a waiting game. It needs to wait until the car lots finally fill up, allowing prices to come down. It has to hope the home builders make a mistake and put up too many houses, but don't hold your breath. In a normal business cycle, there'd be overbuilding of housing, including apartments and cars on the way up. We should have had a lot more units for sale. It didn't happen this time, in part because of pandemic-related supply disruptions, and in part because there's been a significant uptick in immigration, creating more potential customers. So we sit here and debate what the Fed can or can't do, but I think the Fed's trapped for now. There's nothing they can do. They can only wait. In time, this too shall pass, but nothing else can really help, at least for now. I like to say there's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise I'll find it just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer. See you next time. Last call starts now.
All opinions expressed by Jim Cramer on this podcast are solely Cramer's opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, or their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by Cramer on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Jim Cramer as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his opinion. Cramer's opinions are based upon information he considers reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and/or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Mad Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/Mad Money disclaimer.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.